All right, Germany's government has hit the 100 days mark. This is usually the time for some pretty boring discussions about whether a new administration has done this or that. But this time in Germany, it really is different. Many here see that Friedrich Merz's coalition is some kind of last chance for centrist parties to fix this country's problems. And that if they fail, voters might go for the far right or the far left next time around. So Merz's first 100 days do really matter. And on this Berlin briefing, we're going to break down the goals that he set in four critical areas: the economy, defense and foreign policy, coalition unity after all the bickering that went before, and immigration. And we're going to see how he's doing so far in all of these areas before finally asking, is he managing to win over the German people? We've got Michaela here in the studio, and Stefan Dietjen of German Public Radio is joining us on Zoom. Great to have you both here. So let's get started. And just to kick off, I want to just play a quote from Friedrich Merz from just a few weeks ago, kind of giving a little bit of his own verdict on how things are going so far.
We have tackled a lot. We have achieved quite a bit, but there's still much to be done. We can sense that the mood in the country is improving again.
The mood in the country is improving again, says Friedrich Merz. So this is kind of going to be a bit of our theme, because I think mood is also one of the big issues in Germany. It's definitely been on a feeling of a kind of a downer the last few years. And at the heart of that is the economy. There's been this sense that Germany has been stuck in stagflation, like sort of stagnant or negative growth plus high inflation. Michaela, let's get started on the economy then. How are things going, and what has Merz been doing on this front?
Well, inflation here in Germany is pretty much under control, but certainly that economic growth, he promised nothing short of a real economic drive, taking Germany out of its lethargy of the what was called the traffic light coalition under German Chancellor Scholz, who kept insisting that the economy would get better, and it kept getting worse. So now at least there's a floor to this. 0.3% growth is expected this year.
0.3.
So that's
not a lot.
It's not a lot. What the IFO Institute is saying, and yeah, by German standards, that's pretty solid these days. And for next year, we're expecting upward of 1% up to 1.5% growth. But this still is a pie in the sky. And Friedrich Merz himself, who won an election promising very swift action, is now discovering that he can't just push stuff through that easily. He has a whopping 500 billion euros to spend on infrastructure. And he is still struggling within his own coalition how much of that will actually be seen on roads in terms of solid infrastructure, and whether some of that spending could go elsewhere. That's what the Social Democrats would also like to see, to also bolster the social structure here in Germany, what they perceive as being a key issue also in tackling the far right. And he has the big issues of real structural reform coming this autumn. He wants to reform the German pension system, which is chronically short of money. Instead of doing that, his cabinet has just signed off on what is promised to future generations of keeping these pensions stable, but that will cost more money. So the question is, where is he going to save that money that he promised to save? And that's still an open question. So people might lose faith if he doesn't manage to move fast on these promises and actually produce more economic growth.
And Stefan, I mean, some of this is politically really controversial as well, right? Because so Michaela mentioned this 500 billion euro fund for investment in infrastructure and also in climate change measures. But this is going to be borrowed money, and that's controversial in Friedrich Merz's own conservative party. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what are the political kind of issues around that particular economic measure?
Yes, of course. We have to remember that a policy of low debts or no debts, of a balanced federal budget, was the core identity of the Christian Democratic Party and the Christian Social Union, the Bavarian partner of Merz's own party. So that was their core identities. And what they saw even before Merz was elected chancellor was that in the old parliament, after the federal election, but that one of the last things they did was changing the constitution, putting up this giant debt budget which allows, of course, the new government to pursue this policy of investments in infrastructure and in the defense budget, of course. But if we remember Friedrich Merz's analysis of the problems, of the economical problems Germany had, the analysis in his electoral campaign last year, that was that Germany is in a structural industrial crisis. Of course, concerns mostly the car manufacturing industry, and we still see the big car manufacturers announcing cuts and drastic measures we have never seen before in the car manufacturing industry. So money won't solve the structural crisis we are seeing in the German industry. And Friedrich Merz knows this very well. And I think this is the core question the government is confronted with. We shouldn't forget that Friedrich Merz is a guy who spent two decades after his first political career in the world of finance and as a lawyer. He had left politics and pursued in kind of an American style of political career. And we are seeing this also in the composition of his government. He brought a guy from the electronics industry in his cabinet as a minister for digitalization. He brought Katharina Reiche in the cabinet as a minister for economic affairs, a politician with East German origins who also had a first political career decades ago, left politics, had a career in the energy business, and then returned as the Minister of Economy. And we, after 100 days, it's impossible to really see how this will unfold and what measures they are ready to take and what they are planning.
And this point of energy, which Stefan picks up there, Michele, I mean, there are many observers that say, the biggest structural challenge that Germany really faces now is that energy is simply too expensive. Like, what is the government doing about that?
Well, it has implemented a new regulation which will see drastic cuts in energy tax to the minimum 0.5% per megawatt hour for certain industries that need a lot of energy. But this is breaking an election promise in the sense that ordinary Germans won't feel any of these cuts. There's no cuts for ordinary households. And although those could have been minuscule, it would have made a psychological difference. And I think what we're seeing right now is Friedrich Merz having campaigned on a platform of doing more CEO-style politics. I mean, as a CEO, you just have to convince your board and then you can just implement a plan and everybody else has to follow. And that's how we see him treating his own party to a certain degree, which keeps backfiring on him. And there he lacked a bit of sensitivity in also dealing with the public and his own electorate. It might have not made a huge difference for a household to have a tax break of like 10 euros a year or something, but he could have said that he delivered. Yeah. And instead, there's something like the Mütterrente, a new pension entitlement for mothers, and that will cost several billion euros. And that's what the CSU, his Bavarian sister party, managed to negotiate, who can now go to their voters and say, look, we promised, we delivered. So he clearly made a mistake there in not delivering and having a much more of a CEO take on what needs to get done. But the tough things are still coming. The structural reforms that he promised he will tackle, that he criticized previous governments for, particularly Angela Merkel, who he doesn't see eye to eye with, although she's from his own political camp, who was very much considering public opinion on every move she made. And Merz is a man who defines what needs to get done and everybody else should follow, and that is not working. So we're seeing him watch and learn how politics works as opposed to a boardroom business.
Yeah, so and we'll get back to his political skills and issues a little bit later. And we also, of course, we have a lot more on the economy and particularly the impact of tariffs on a recent issue from a couple of weeks ago. So do check out that recent one. But I want to move on to foreign and defence policy, because this, of course, with Ukraine war is an absolutely massive issue. And come to you, Stefan, because it does connect to what we're talking about here, because as you mentioned, the increase in borrowing from this government is not just for infrastructure spending, it's also for spending on the military. Germany had chronically and famously spent very little on its military for a very long time. Now it is really ramping up. Stefan, for people out there, is Germany really finally, do we see evidence that it is finally getting serious about spending significantly more on its defense?
Yes, definitely, of course, but we shouldn't forget that the historic shift in German politics and in the German attitude began with the old government, with Olaf Scholz and the announcement of the Zeitenwende. And whoever
this turning point, yeah.
Turning point, and Michaela, I'm sure, and Richard, we've seen the speech Scholz delivered in the German parliament a few days after the full-scale attack of Russia against Ukraine, when he announced these policies and announced that he will drastically increase the German defense budget. And we saw the shocked faces in his own coalition among the Green Party and in the caucus of the Social Democratic Party. So that was the real historic turning point. And this is what we see now with the increases in the defense budget. This is the consequence drawn by a coalition of Friedrich Merz and, again, the Social Democrats. Of course, we will see that Germany will spend much more in defense, but I think the most important change we saw that Friedrich Merz had a better ability to, on the symbolic, in the field of symbolic policies, he had a better way of communicating with Zelensky, with his European. That was always one of the major difficulties of Olaf Scholz. People and also political partners simply didn't understand Olaf Scholz, his way of communicating, his lack of ability to do these gestures, these also physical gestures, embracing people, shaking hands, smiling at people. That wasn't the style of Olaf Scholz. And with Friedrich Merz, we saw a change in that sense. And I think this brought European unity forward. And I think that we see Friedrich Merz acting in a new way as a political leader in Europe, as we haven't seen it before with Olaf Scholz and the old government.
Yeah, so I mean, Olaf Scholz had this very sort of cautious personality and appeared. So he appeared with very quiet. Friedrich Merz is making this sort of bolder impression, specifically on Ukraine, Michaela. So, I mean, he was always, you know, pretty much out there saying that we need to be stronger, Germany needs to be tougher in supporting Ukraine. How do you assess what we've actually seen in terms of actions so far? Because on the one hand, as we're hearing from Stefan too, he's very forthright in his support and the kind of the body language of his support. But there are some things that he seems to have gone back on. For instance, he'd always said, oh, I want to send these Taurus cruise missiles to Ukraine. And the minute he gets into the chancellery, it's, well, not so sure.
Well, actually, the closer he got to election day, the more quiet he went on the whole Taurus issue. That is the magic that you being in power, but also having the responsibility does to people, that you become more cautious on what the side effects could be.
So still, he's basically worried about the same things that Scholz would have been worried about, that this is kind of a weapon that could be provocative towards the Russians.
Let's put it this way: he just went silent on it, and he said he then suddenly signed up to the strategic ambiguity that the French President Emmanuel Macron stands for, and said that we will no longer be public. Also, there was a major shift. I mean, before in the Scholz government, there was a list online you could check out what the German government was sending. I'm sure that list wasn't complete, but it was transparent. Now he's shifted to saying we don't no longer want to discuss publicly what exactly we're sending. And on the Taurus issue, he remains completely cagey. There's now talk that far-reaching weapons will be produced in Ukraine. That, you know, that feels like it has Taurus written all over it, but we don't have any kind of official confirmation that something like that is taking place. And he clearly did not want that decision, a decision like that, attached to his name. He now sees the risks differently. And to a certain degree, he signed up to the Olaf Scholz take on it. But Olaf Scholz was so bad at communicating. And he also didn't want to leave the public with an impression that there was something that they would need to worry about. And I think here Merz is more transparent in the sense and always reassuring. I think it's notable how from day one he said, look, these are very difficult times, but this country has all the means to get through this crisis, to rebuild its economy. And so he has a very different way of also taking the public into a responsibility for a joined future. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he's managed to really change society here on this, but in terms of the Zeitenwende, I also just want to stress one figure. What Olaf Scholz pledged was 100 billion extra, and it did shock every... I was in that room, like very few people were informed. It was a complete shock. But the amount of money Germany dedicates just to prop up the pension system every year is above 120 billion. So it's very shocking to Germany. It's a giant leap for Germany, but it's really not such a huge step to many of its NATO allies. So Germany has a lot of catching up to do there. And that's also why the tax break doesn't apply now. The Greens helped stop that tax
the debt break. Yeah, so the constitutional limit on borrowing,
It's a blank check now. It's a blank check now, and all major parties have signed up to this.
I want to talk about Trump, because of course for Merz one of the big challenges is managing Donald Trump, that relationship. I think many thought that Olaf Scholz would struggle with that. They're just kind of chalk and cheese, totally different people. Merz kind of personality, where many came in thinking maybe he will manage to deal with Trump. I'll come to you in a moment, Stefan, but let's just hear a question that you put to Merz a few months ago, Michaela, just when he was starting out, about what would be his message to Donald Trump when he became chancellor. Let's just listen to that and we'll come to you, Stefan.
Someone from where you're standing right now, what is your message to Donald Trump?
The key message to Donald Trump is Germany is back on track. Germany will fulfill the obligations in terms of defense, and Germany is willing to strengthen their own competitiveness. And that is not just Germany, that is Europe. The European Union and Germany will be again a very strong partner within the European Union, and we will bring the European Union forward.
So, Stefan, let's talk about that. The message, part of that message that was aimed at Trump. Has Merz achieved that? Do you think he's kind of reset the German-American relationship for the Trumpian era?
Summer is here and vacation is calling. So at the end of July, we're bringing you a special series with our favorite tips for living a greener life. From what to look out for in your sunscreen to how to reduce your dog's environmental paw print, we'll get insights and advice from the experts and have a look at our own habits. Find our Greener Living series from Living Planet wherever you get podcasts.
Well, I think the soundbite we just heard was the day of the signing of the coalition treaty, Michaela,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And of course, he delivered a message to Donald Trump when he visited Donald Trump in the Oval Office. And I also had the chance to be in the press delegation in the Oval Office. And it was very clear that he brought a message to Donald Trump. And that was not primarily the message, Germany is back on track. That was a given at that moment. But the message he had, we need you, Mr. President, we need the United States. And I think the way he did it in the Oval Office was an example for a well-considered and well-performed act of diplomacy. He went into the Oval Office, he met Trump, he knew there would be this press event in the Oval, this bizarre-style press event with a crowd of journalists, heard it in the Oval Office, and then the complete chaos. Nobody knew how long that would take, which questions Donald Trump would take. Would he have prepared questions? Everybody was speculating. Would it be something like we have seen it with Zelensky or a few days before with the South African president? It was completely different. And Merz went in there and he was decided to let Donald Trump have his show to speak. And 90% of the show we saw, and it took nearly an hour, was Donald Trump speaking about domestic American politics. But then came a moment when Merz had a chance to speak, and that was one message. He said, Mr. Trump, there was a time when America was acting in Europe, and we Germans are grateful for the American involvement in the Second World War. And now America has a second chance, has a new chance, has a historic mission to be back in Europe and to save freedom, liberty, and peace in Europe. That was the message he delivered. And it was obvious that at least at that moment, Donald Trump understood this message.
And he managed to establish a rapport. That was the mission, and it was mission accomplished. We were both in the press, traveling with the Chancellor. Clearly, his staff was, if anything, overprepared. They had prepared into every small detail. I mean, we discussed this afterwards. Our impression was that they only used a fraction of what they prepared because he simply hardly got
a
word
in. War game that situation. Yeah, so.
But there's proof of this. We just saw 100 days of Merz, and that saw that video conference with European allies hosted out of Germany with Zelensky here, with Trump on the phone and the vice president. So he did manage to do. And that's an example of this, is reestablish Germany as a leading nation that brings together the Europeans. That's a huge diplomatic success for Friedrich Merz, also in very difficult times. And clearly Trump answers his calls. And that was a precondition, actually, for being able to achieve anything also in Europe and internationally in these very much Trump-dominated times.
The final foreign policy issue I want to talk about, maybe come back to you, Stefan, on this, is Israel and the war in Gaza. So Friedrich Merz and his Conservative Party have always been extremely strong supporters of Israel. And of course, since the terrorist attacks of October 7th, you know, really doubling down on that support. But in recent months, they've clearly struggled with the images and reporting about what's been going on in Gaza. And Merz has become increasingly critical of the Israeli government, to the point where recently he announced that he would stop the supply of some military supplies to the Israelis that could be used in the conflict in Gaza. So walk us through that, because this is a politically very tricky area for Merz, and how he handled that.
Of course, it's tricky, and it's astonishing. It's one of the astonishing moves we have seen with the new government, because Friedrich Merz was the politician who, even before the election in January, in a speech he gave in a German foreign policy foundation in the Körber Stiftung, announced that he would find means and ways to receive Netanyahu, despite of the arrest warrant of the International Criminal Court, that he would find means and ways to receive Benjamin Netanyahu in Germany. He explicitly said that he wouldn't accept the arrest warrant, which is, of course, a very astonishing statement for a German or coming German chancellor. And he repeated this message in a telephone call with Benjamin Netanyahu in the election night. So the more astonishing it was that we heard Friedrich Merz on the day of his election as chancellor, stating that Israel is an issue of great concern for him. And from that moment on, the tonality of the German government policies towards Israel changed. We heard these expressions of concern, and we saw this pathway leading to the decision to stop the export of weapons that might be used in Gaza. We still don't know what this practically means, whether the decision that really has any impact on the practical relation or on weapons deliveries, because we don't know how much weapons Germany in the end delivered. It was not very much, but of course this was a drastic historic statement, and we have seen the own party of Friedrich Merz also in this field erupting in protest, because the question of loyalty to Israel has become a matter of political identity in Germany, not only in the field of foreign policy, but in the field of domestic policy, in the field of identity of parties. So we are seeing this divide, which has become a global divide. How do you stand to Israel? How critical are you? How loyal are you? Up to which point are you unconditionally loyal to Israel? This has become an issue, a dividing issue in Germany, and we are seeing this divide running through Friedrich Merz and his own party.
Although he does have the public behind him in that sense. Like, two-thirds of Germans are for a tougher stance on this Israeli government over Gaza, so to be very specific. So what we saw was a real reflex also within his own political camps, because there was such an outrage to make such a statement. In practical terms, from all the briefings we've had, it really doesn't make much difference. And frankly, the Israelis don't need the German weapons. Mm. It will not make a difference to them. So this is very much a symbolic issue. And Benjamin Netanyahu was very fast to respond and to, you know, rejecting this as support for Hamas.
Yeah.
This is how it was framed.
So many pointed out that Germany is really more dependent on Israeli weapons, or particularly, you know, air defense systems, which
yes.
has been ordering.
Well, the Arrow 3 system yeah. is an Israeli system that the Germans want to make the cornerstone of their own aerial defense. So if Israel were to threaten to pull out, that would have a huge implication for Germany's ability to defend itself in the future. In fact, it needs US weapons to bridge that gap until that system is delivered. So this is talking about dependency. People keep stressing that Israel is also economically dependent on Germany. Well, you know, this is a strategic dependence there. But this, the issue of solidarity with Israel was always above any all other real term dependencies and political aspects. That is a
because
fundamental identity question for German politicians.
Yeah. But I want to move on to our next section, Stefan, which is really about Friedrich Merz's kind of political competences and his ability to manage his party and his coalition. Because as you mentioned, that this decision on Gaza and weapons to Israel took many in his party by surprise. There was a certain degree of rebellion within the party. And this is not the first time that he's faced that within his party, is it? So, you know, if we go back to the very day when he was confirmed as chancellor in a vote in the parliament, which is obviously the last step towards becoming chancellor, he even failed on the first vote, which hadn't happened in post-war Germany. So, Stefan, what can we learn now at this 100 days mark about, you know, does Friedrich Merz have the full backing of his party? Because there have been other instances and questions as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the question is absolutely in the room. Does he have the full backing of his own party? Which is astonishing, because we shouldn't forget how Merz became not only chancellor, but the chairman of his own party. It was a astonishing political comeback, which started in 2018, I think, when Angela Merkel announced that he wouldn't stand again for the election of the chair of her own party. And that was the first moment when Friedrich Merz came back in the political arena, and two times he failed in his attempts to become chairman of the Christian Democratic Union. Only in the third attempt he became the chairman of the Christian Democratic Union, which was the precondition for him to run as chancellor and be elected as chancellor finally. So it's a long history. And what Merz promised his own party, and for a part of the Christian Democratic Union, he became like a saint, was a change in political style, a change in leadership. Leading in another way that Angela Merkel led. It was his promise to the Christian Democratic Union, who was tired of Angela Merkel's style of compromising. And so Merz arrived in the chancellery, and of course, Michaela said that earlier, he can't govern completely different than any other chancellor in Germany, because as a chancellor in Germany, you have to govern in a coalition, which means you have to compromise. You have to be a master of a compromise, like Angela Merkel was, and Friedrich Merz has to do that as well. But in certain moments, we saw him fulfilling his promise of leadership. And the Israel question was a moment frustrating a large part, particularly the conservative parts of his own party, who some years earlier were the key supporters of Friedrich Merz, hoping for this different style of politics. So this is in a way tearing his own party apart and putting his party in a very difficult situation and in a kind of identity crisis. Mm.
And this kind of connects to the issue that Merz's majority in parliament is very slim, right? So it doesn't take very many sort of rebels on a given issue to put his majority in parliament into question. And we saw that, for instance, you know, when then there was an attempt, we won't go into the details of that, we've had other episodes on that, but recently there was an attempt to get some new judges confirmed to the Constitutional Court, so the equivalent of the Supreme Court here. And that fell through because they just didn't have the votes. So, and Michelle, some of those questions sort of focus on Merz's chief whip, this man Jens Spahn, so a powerful younger member of the party who's seen as more conservative, really. And there are some questions about, you know, whether Merz really has the loyalty of some of these key figures. Talk to us about that.
Yes, that vote was postponed. This is something in Germany, the election of judges in parliament is usually something that nobody really notices. It's hardly mentioned because there is a previous meeting of all parties, representatives. There's a special committee in the parliament, yeah, which agrees on the candidates. And then getting the vote done is usually just a formality. Mm-hmm. Now, these candidates, particularly Mrs. Borsius-Gerstorff, was agreed upon by everybody. And then we saw really a media campaign against her, driven by right-wing media, also suspected of being close to the AfD. The AfD latched onto this issue. Merz wasn't very smart in how he answered a question from the far-right AfD alleging that this judge was for abortion until the very last moment before birth. And he said he would still support her. Of course, he didn't mean that he supported that kind of take on it. The whole take isn't the position of Borsius-Gerstorff. It was completely framed. Anyway, the way it was communicated then led to serious doubts. The church made some statements, and that's the moment where the CDU and CSU, and the C stands for Christian, got cold feet. Church, yeah. MPs got cold feet and said they could no longer vote for Mrs. Borsius-Gerstorff. And Jens Spahn had clearly not done his homework. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that conversation that must have taken place between Friedrich Merz and his chief whip after this completely fell flat, because it was such an embarrassment for the government not to be able to get something done. And now we have a very public discussion on the whole process of how these judges are elected. It's called into question. It actually calls into question a key element of German democracy. And that means this is what the far-right AfD party wanted to achieve. It worked out. And some conservative MPs really didn't see it coming and played along and became instrumentalized in this campaign. So this is a real embarrassment for not just Jens Spahn, who's not even very much liked. I mean, he's not that terribly liked by many.
And what about these questions of loyalty? Whether he's you know, there are some who are questioning whether he's really acting in Merz's interests or whether his real agenda is that, you know, later he wants to lead the party himself.
Well, I'm not willing to go down that road that this was all a conspiracy or that this was a strategy by Jens Spahn. He's not that firmly in control of his own MPs to take that kind of risk right now. I know there was a debate whether that could have been his plan. It was not his plan. He had dozens of conversations trying to change the minds of MPs. I know that for a fact. And he failed in doing that. So he has a skin in the game as well. He has a full-blown scandal still biting him from the past over deals done while he was health minister during Corona time. The pandemic, the mask deals, some allies made a lot of money, so let's just leave it there. So it deflected from that, but it now has raised question marks actually on Jens Spahn's own capabilities in the future. So it harmed him more at this than it helped him, but it damaged Friedrich Merz and his own party, which, you know, MPs said after this election, we're not just an association to elect a chancellor. We also want to be an active part of policy making. And that comes back to his style of doing or of interpreting what being a chancellor means. Clearly, he should have communicated back. He should have been more in the loop. His excuse is that he was very much tied up with Donald Trump. That was during the period of his first visit to the US. Ukraine is and Russia is keeping him very much in the foreign policy sphere. And then he took one look back at what's happening in Germany and this blew up in his face. So it's raising some question marks on how stable his own troops can actually get lined up by his own chief whip in the future.
And Stefan, I mean, the previous government was riven by infighting, but that was really between the different parties. I mean, at the moment we have the Conservatives and Merz is in coalition with the Social Democrats, the centre-left party. How are relations between those two parties going?
Well, I think the whole thing, this discussion Michaela described about the election of this Supreme Court judge is way more than a question of loyalty or political skills or stability of this coalition. It's a fundamental question of the direction German politics will take in the next years and in the next decades. And this is a question which must be primarily directed to the Christian Democratic Union, to the Conservative Party. We have to remember, our audience, that for the election of Supreme Court judges, you need a two-third majority in the parliament, which this coalition doesn't have. So this coalition doesn't only have to compromise in the coalition, they also have to look for partners to achieve this two-third majority in the parliament to vote to elect Supreme Court judges. And for the Christian Democrats, the fundamental question underlying the whole debate is, are they accepting to compromise not only with the Social Democrats, but also with the Greens, and which is even harder for the Christian Democrats, with the left party, with Die Linke, the post-socialist party in Germany. And they need both of them to get the two-third majority. This is the question underlying the whole debate. And there is a part in the Christian Democratic Party which evidently, either explicitly or not explicitly, is dreaming of a conservative right-wing majority in the German parliament, which they might have one day with the AfD. This is the undercurrent underlying this whole debate we are seeing here. And the key question with regard to the chief whip, to Jens Spahn, is on which side in this debate is he or will he be in a moment when the Christian Democrats are when they really have to decide which way they are going in the future. Friedrich Merz definitely is a politician. He's a 20th century politician. His whole upbringing is the political system of the 20th century with its stability, which is founded in the political center, in a broad majority in the political center with Christian Democrats, liberals, Social Democrats. And Jens Spahn might be the person considering or seeing himself as a 21st century politician who thinks in different categories, who is open to acting in a completely different way, and who also might be open for other kinds of majorities in the German parliament. He was in close contact with Sebastian Kurz, the Austrian former chancellor, who led in a right-wing to the former Conservative Party in Austria in a right-wing coalition. So this is the key question in the Christian Democratic Party, in the Merz camp, but this is also a key question for the future of German politics.
And there will be plenty of opportunity to see where he stands on this, because we have next year half a dozen regional states going to elections, including Saxony-Anhalt, where the AfD could get a majority. So what comes out of different camps of the Conservatives will be very telling in how open they might be to breaking with their own rule of non-cooperation rule with the AfD. Having said that, Merz did accept AfD votes to pass a motion on migration in Parliament that just before the elections.
Before he became
Chancellor, he definitely ruled anything like that out now once he's in office. But that's because he felt so strongly on migration, and he does not feel that that was cooperation. Critics say it was cooperation. Strictly speaking, it wasn't, because it doesn't have any consequence in terms of actually a law being enacted. But these are really interesting key decisions on what the future might hold and whether the AfD manages to break that resistance from the Conservatives, because they declared, we will chase them down into a corporation. That's their aim.
So this is one of the big strategic questions that hangs over the Conservatives. You know, do they keep trying to resist the AfD, or do they ultimately say we need to cooperate with them? One of the core issues there is immigration. So that's the final kind of policy area that I wanted to talk about today. Let's get through this quickly, because we want to kind of get to our final points as well. So Friedrich Merz came in saying, I'm going to be tougher on immigration. Michaela, what's he done?
Well, first of all, on the first day, he let his interior minister allow for people who arrive at German borders and want to claim asylum to be turned back from the German border. This is different from pushbacks. They were turned back. Courts have since shown that this was not legal. Indeed, there are always individual cases, so the cases that were brought to court. And this raises huge question marks on how far he's willing to go in terms of making a point. There have been repatriation flights to Afghanistan, and the past government managed to organize one. We've seen two more now. And we've seen a halt to asylum seekers who are here or people who have asylum from being able to bring their family to Germany as well. That has been halted. So that also makes quite an impact. And we are also seeing a new debate on declaring safe countries of origins here in Germany.
Now, at the same time, Merz is trying to be clear that Germany doesn't want to kind of end immigration, that it still recognises that demographically it needs skilled immigration into its workforce. But still, he is emphasising this point of toughness. I want to listen to a soundbite which from Merz speaking in Parliament, and then we'll just come to you, Stefan, about that. But this is Merz talking about what he sees as his achievements in cracking down on irregular migration.
We have made the first steps towards a sustainable reduction in irregular migration. Ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. Weidel, the number of asylum applications fell by 43% in the first half of 2025 compared to the same period last year. Apparently unnoticed by you. Yes, you are slowly losing the political cause to which you owe your existence. Ladies and gentlemen, we will solve this problem.
So, Stefan, he's addressing Alice Weidel, the co-leader of the AfD party there, the far-right party, directly. So really seeing immigration as absolutely core to his mission of trying to defeat the AfD. He says at the end that he will kind of defuse that issue to the extent that it takes away really the foundations of the AfD's strength. Is it working, do you feel, from what we can see so far?
It's evidently not working. We have seen in these days the first poll in which the AfD is the strongest political force in Germany, stronger than the Christian Democratic Union. So in this moment, evidently, it's not working as a means to defeat the AfD. We shouldn't forget this, what they are doing. Michaela described it, and the key point of the changes in politics is the decision to turn back asylum seekers on the German borders. This is a symbolic policy. If you speak to members of the coalition, also to members of the Christian Democratic Party, they in background, they openly say, yes, it's about symbolic acts. It's not about numbers. It's about showing people that we are doing something, and it's, of course, particularly this issue of turning back asylum seekers on the German borders is the most symbolic and the most visible change compared to Angela Merkel's policy, because this issue was also dividing Angela Merkel's coalition. And Friedrich Merz accepted and pursued this policy of turning back asylum seekers on the German borders, not giving them asylum procedure in Germany as European law demands, evidently, and Friedrich Merz knows that he is in conflict with the European law, that he is also in conflict with many of his European partners. I was on the first day of his term, Michaela remembers it, I accompanied Merz on his trip to Paris and to Warsaw, and it was evident the anger he was confronted with when he was in Warsaw and was confronted with the Polish Prime Minister angrily accusing Germany of acting against the European legal standards in the European asylum system. But he is accepting that because he is convinced that this is the means to defeat the AfD, but until now, it's not working.
And, I mean, let's kind of start pulling everything together now. You know, so at the very beginning, we heard that soundbite where Merz was saying that we can sense that the mood in the country is improving again. If we draw all of this together, so immigration is still a tough issue, but we've talked about foreign defence policy, we've talked about the economy, we've talked about kind of good government and managing party unity. As Stefan just mentioned there, there was a poll this week where the AfD was ahead of the CDU. Other polls have the CDU just ahead of the AfD, but it's definitely, it's close. Kind of this sense of a sour mood in the country is one of the key drivers of AfD support. Where do you see this going, Michaela? Has Merz kind of made the beginnings across all of these issues in the first 100 days that can gradually turn that around? Or is it too early to say?
Well, he certainly made a fresh start. He definitely did. And he was willing and is willing to think in terms of where Germany needs to get, rather than thinking in terms of, will I get everybody on the same page to go in the direction where I achieve what I ultimately want, which is very much the Merkel style way of doing politics. She always only defined a goal once she knew how to get there. Scholz only ever defined a goal when he was actually practically already there. And Merz seems still pretty unafraid to declare where he feels the country needs to get. And then he starts working out how he will get his coalition together to go there. I think he's learned this the hard way now, and he will be more cautious as he starts tackling the really thorny issues of social reform, pension reform, that's coming up this autumn. On foreign policy, he can claim to have achieved that he is seen as being in the lead in Europe, particularly with the star of an Emmanuel Macron fading fast as his term will draw to a close, and also in getting a real line of communication with Donald Trump. Here domestically, he still has a lot of thorny issues, and he needs to get the Social Democrats to actually be on his side, and he needs to get his own coalition to be less keen on creating their own counter profile to their overarching Chancellor Friedrich Merz. So overall, I think he is making some real headway.
Yeah. And I mean, Stefan, maybe just to finish with you, the old truism from 90s politics in America was it's the economy, stupid. I mean, is that ultimately going to be the thing that judges whether Merz has success or failure over the course of his term if he does manage to revive the German economy?
Well, the economy, this term definitely is an American term, and Michaela reminded us that in Germany it's also about social issues, about the social reforms, the pension system, the social welfare system. I think this will be the possible breaking points of this coalition, and taking into consideration what we saw in the last days and weeks in this coalition, I am pretty skeptical whether this coalition will survive the infights they will stand in the coming weeks and month. And I'm even more skeptical with regard to the Christian Democratic Party and the Christian Social Union, Merkel's own camp, than with regard to the Social Democratic Party. I think that the leadership in this coalition is willing to compromise, but I doubt that the Christian Democratic, Christian Social camp is ready to do the compromises they have to do in this coalition, because the temptation to just think about a right-wing coalition in Germany is evidently too great meanwhile in Germany.
Just to illustrate how the Social Democrats and Friedrich Merz's conservatives think differently about an exact issue when they actually share the same goal, we just saw pass through a cabinet a new guarantee also for the younger generations that the level of their pension will remain stable, which will cost a lot more money. And we see the conservative camp criticize this as a concession to the Social Democrats because it will cost future generations so much and shifts that burden further on the younger generation. At the same time, you see Bärbel Baas, who's kind of the social affairs minister from the Social Democrats, say, no, but this is great news for the younger generation because it will also guarantee their pension. But, you know, where the money will come from, as always, is the big bone of contention. And even within this next span, 26, 28, when they have to look at the finances, they have to save upwards of 150 billion euros. So they will hit the same financial problems that the past coalition had, despite the fact that they were able to break that debt brake for much needed infrastructure investment, and that the sky now is the limit for any kind of investment into Germany's military.
So we've definitely kind of touched on about, I don't know, the next 10 episodes of Berlin Brief, and we've kind of set them all up there. But I think we'll end it there. Thanks so much to you, Stefan and Michaela. A lot to think about after 100 days of Merz. Thank you for watching on YouTube, for listening on any podcast provider, and do subscribe on any provider that you're using. And also do leave us a comment on YouTube. We love looking at those comments, and they do give us ideas for future episodes. And also, if you haven't signed up yet to DW's Berlin Briefing newsletter online, dw.com, do go ahead and do that, because that's a great roundup of what's been going on in Germany during the past week. But yeah, for now, thanks again, Michaela. Thanks, Stefan. And see you next time.